listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Your host of the most, Nikki Kolula. We have a very special guest, one of my favorite musicians on the planet, Mr. Will Harrington. How are you?
How you doing, my friend? Long time no see.
Way too long. You're in Nashville now, right?
I am in Nashville for a little bit longer, yeah.
And you're going to move back to Los Angeles through the grapevine. That's what I'm hearing.
Coming back, man. Coming back. It's time.
So let me ask you first. You went through the Nashville scene. Are you like, this is all right. I prefer LA. Tell me why you wanted to make that transition both to Nashville and then also to come back.
Well, I mean, it was COVID in 2020. So I was kind of like, I remember I saw some friends that I knew that moved to Nashville and they were playing on all these records. It was more of a session town. And so I was like, well, this is a good excuse to get out and try the Nashville thing. And it had really good points. But then after a while, I just felt like I belonged better in LA. I've gone back a few times and played with some of my old musician friends. It just feels right. And it's just, you know, I tried something new, but kind of LA is where I cut my teeth and everybody started their careers together. So it's just where I kind of belong at this point. So
well,
a couple months, I don't know.
Music to my ears because I want you back playing with us more than anything, man.
It's hey, like, man.
You just got such a great feel. You're just a great musician, period. So when you said that, I was like, oh my God, he's moving back to LA. We're going to do so much cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're going to do it, man. We're going to do it soon, I'm sure.
I'm excited. So you've been busy writing music. You know what I really love is like you come from New Orleans. You're a terrific jazz musician. You have toured all over the world with Lucas Graham. You play with all kinds of bands, all kinds of musicians. And I love that you're still writing. Tell me why writing music is so important to you, because I really respect that so much about you, because a lot of musicians, they'll get on tours, they'll do all this stuff, and they forget that, like, that's a very important part to document your story in music, the composing part of it, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's kind of a two-part answer. The first one, the most obvious one, is I always felt like I had some things to express musically that didn't necessarily all come out with the stuff I was hired to do. All of that's amazing, pays the bills, and it's fun. I meet people, all of that. But writing kind of lets you say what you want to say, and you have control over it. You're not really having to always depend on what somebody asks you to do. And don't get me wrong, that is awesome. I love it. I can't wait to play with you or all my friends. That's why I'm going back. But it's nice to write also to have that to supplement. And the other thing, I feel that writing somehow puts you on a different level of individuality as far as people calling you as a hired musician. Number one, you get to showcase what you want to showcase. So if I play with, you said, Lucas Graham, like I can sound as well as I'm going to sound on that. But what if I want to showcase this other thing that I wanted to do? And you can do that with your own music. And I've actually gotten a couple of really cool sessions out here from, you know, people who heard some original stuff that they didn't really know I could. I played that type of stuff because how could they are only You know, so, I mean, that's a long answer to a short question, but that's really why. I mean, writing's super rad. You don't have to, like, you can do it whenever you want. You play with your friends, you can go write. You can write your own stuff with your friends. I mean, all that kind of stuff. So it's, and it's good for the heart, too.
What I also love, too, is, like, you know, the New Orleans blood starts pumping through your compositions, which is, like, one of my favorite parts of your writing. It's, like... Mm-hmm. You can do so many different kind of ventures musically, but you always have this feel that is just a part of your upbringing. It's a part of the kind of like sound that you were around early on, and it always seeps into the things that you do. Tell me how much the New Orleans vibe was inherent in your sound, or as a player, or as a composer, or all three.
Oh, dude, it's been in my playing as much as anything for as long as I can remember. I always loved Professor Longhair and Dr. John. And it was a weird time when I was growing up. We didn't have YouTube to check out all this stuff. Like, you kind of had to grow up in it. Whereas kids now, you can be from, you know, Armenia or something and sound like Buddy Guy. You know, it's hard to do that. I did play with a guy who does sound really good, but like that. But it's a different time. Whereas before, it was more of it was a colloquial thing, I guess you would call it parochial, something like that. And I would even something like going to Mardi Gras and hearing like stuff that was on the radio that was only played in Mardi Gras that I kind of fell in love with. So I learned how to play like Dr. John by working tremendously, because it drove me nuts not sounding exactly like him from like 8 to 13. And then gradually I was influenced by a lot of other stuff, a lot of it people I played with, not necessarily stuff off the radio or whatever. And it just kind of leaked into it. It's definitely a part of it. It's probably the biggest part. And the only thing I would add, the whole YouTube thing, it's awesome that people can be from somewhere else and learn about Memphis musicians or New Orleans musicians or whatever. But there is something to be said about growing up in it. And you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. even things, this is going to kind of sound heady, but even things like looking at the, architecture of New Orleans and how it fits with the music. It does. I'm telling you, it does. It sounds weird. It does. Oh, and it kind of becomes part of your, gets in your blood a little bit. So yeah, I'm probably not escaping that. Even if I wanted to.
No, we've talked about this before. Yeah. A lot of the influence that I hear in your playing is Henry Butler. I hear a lot of Henry Butler in your playing. And he's
I just covered one of his tunes. Yeah.
And he's actually probably one of my, besides the Meters, but I'd say just for piano, it's Professor Longhorn, it's Henry Butler. And I would almost lean more towards Henry Butler, because it's like, I saw him at Jazz Fest, didn't know who he was, and I just was so blown away by what he was doing, how he was doing it. He was doing it in his late, you know, 70s, I think. And it was just like magnificent. It was like magnificent musicians like just making music together, but he was just leading. He was the steam train. So I hear a lot of his playing in your playing and influence, and I just think that it's amazing that musicians in that city all kind of have this really cool identity that if you're not from New Orleans, you could write music like that, and it's just not going to be the same as when it's just in your heart, in your soul. So that's one of the things I love about your playing, that I don't think anybody can quite emulate. And, you know, when you're writing something, are there moments where you're like, okay, I want to just try and go as far away from this as possible. And even though it's just as part of you, it's still it still, you know, permeates in some, you know, maybe it's a jazz lick, maybe it's a solo, maybe it's some kind of thing. Do you ever find that you're like, okay, I'm going to try and steer as far away as I can just to see how far I can go, either, you know, musically, or do you just find that it's like, you know what, this is what it is, and I'm just going to use it as I explore other realms of music?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't think I've ever been asked that. Yeah, I do. I'm going to try to keep my answer as not tangential as possible, but I would say typically I sit at the piano and I play something that feels good. And I play something that feels good, and the New Orleans thing sometimes comes in and sometimes doesn't. The ones that I had just sent you, the tunes that I sent you, they're more like almost pop music with no words. I would say John Williams is almost just as big of an influence in there, if not more, as far as composing stuff. And my playing is where the New Orleans stuff especially comes out. As far as thematic, you know, the musicality of it, it's a little bit different. But yes, to the other part of the question, do I ever want to get away from the New Orleans stuff? Well, I mean, it's not necessarily that, but I do like to get away from the stuff I've been playing all the time, playing the same licks over and over again that drive me nuts and they get stuck in my head. And I, you know what I mean? Yeah, so yeah. I get away, but I think all of us get sick of what we play at some point. So that would be that. But yeah, I as far as my original stuff, I would say my, you know, the melodies that I write are probably just as much, if not more, influenced by kind of the classic film composers and a lot of the TV jingle writers, like the Matlock theme or something like that. And then my playing, you can hear it. It's unavoidable. So hopefully that answers that question. That was a tough one.
No, I love that, because it's like, you know, it's what a terrific sound to just be around. But I'm sure there's points where you're like, yo, I want to just wear a different hat. I want to be a different, you know, I want to be in a different mindset when I'm either writing or playing. And that's why I asked that, you know. And for me, I wanted to ask a selfish question. When you're watching a piano player, when I watch piano players, I always watch their left hands. I don't know why, because I want to see what they're doing on comping, how they're voicing things. And you know, it's really easy most of the time to emulate what somebody's doing on their right hand if they're soloing. So you hear it, it's like, okay. But I always love how a pianist will voice what they're going to comp and how they're going to comp. Do you kind of watch somebody's right hand, both hands? Do you look at the left hand? I'm fascinated with how a piano player kind of like works with the band and uses space and, you know, kind of comping to kind of you fill in what they're going to play over it. You know what I mean? Do you like what? How do you kind of observe players when you're watching them?
You know, that's interesting. It almost depends on what style is happening. Like, mostly if I had to tie it down to hands and that kind of stuff. I mean, most of it is right hand. I would say the only thing I would pay attention to left hand would be if they do something super groovy, like Brad Meldow and Blackbird, that kind of thing. Then I want to try to, okay, what's he doing? Get in there. But mostly it's feel, it's touch, and it's the composition. If it's an original, and if it's a jazz soloist or something, I disregard the left hand completely.
Wow.
In fact, I've done jazz gigs. I rebel against the left hand a lot. I've done jazz gigs and I don't even touch like the left hand for a whole tune. When I solo, I don't even touch it. You know what I mean? And it's it opens it up, like little things like that. So I think it just depends. I mean, if they're soloing, I listen to their note choice, but mostly I listen to their spacing and all that kind of stuff. And if it's a whole thing, like say Dr. John, yeah, I might listen to the left hand quite a bit, you know, because he's doing stuff.
He's doing like some things that are like adding to the groove, or it is the groove. You know what I mean? It's like, I selfishly ask that because it's like, I'm always wondering when not to play with a bass player, when to play with a bass player, when it's my left hand. You know what I mean? Always like, oh, am I doing too much? And it's like, whenever I play with the band, it's like, oh, I have to like literally cut down what I'm doing on the left.
You're playing piano? You're playing piano these days?
But, yeah. So, like, I played, remember we did a tune called All Night where you did the Hammond solo and I played the Whirly on that. So, it's like I do a lot of stuff like that, but it's like, man, nothing ever replaces having a great pianist like yourself that's able to just modify and elevate an arrangement of sound. So for me, I like to get into your head and see what you're thinking. Do you eliminate that left hand because respect for the bass player, respect for the space on the low end, or do you just like you like it because it gives you more like fireworks in the right hand to do
things? There you go. I wouldn't say necessarily fireworks. That is one thing. I mean, that's a good way to put it, but also it just opens it up. And you know, the bass player does have a little bit more room and I guess all that, but I mean, I'm selfish. I don't care about the bass player. yeah, it just opens it. I mean, if you're just taking a jazz solo, like on, I don't know, There Will Never Be Another You or something, right, and you just take out the left hand, you got bass and drums, it opens it up. Yeah, if I had, I've never had students, but if I did have students, I'd tell them to do that, because I think sometimes comping with the left hand a little too much can be somewhat bulky, but
right.
Yeah, it just depends, man. It depends on the style of music, but you know.
Well, I just think it's like sometimes I'll watch like videos of Herbie and like things that he's playing in the left hand or what he's not playing in the left hand. It's fascinating because it's like you see when he's like wanting to like add fireworks or even just like add chord voicings in the right hand and then extend those, you know, chords in the left hand with different voicings or inversions or something. And I'm like, that's the part I'm like, man, that is, there's a level of mastery, I think, that comes with that. Because it's like I always look at that, you know, like in fascination, because it's like you never know what they're going to do, if they're going to do, you know, a two chord following whatever the groove is, or if they're adding extensions, and usually the extensions are on the right, but with somebody like Herbie, sometimes he'll add them in the left hand, and it's like, what? And you just hear these different sounds, or these kind of like clusters of chords, you know. And speaking of which, as far as jazz musicians, you mentioned Brad Mehldau, but who are some of your other favorite jazz pianists or jazz musicians that I know are major influences on your playing?
I think probably as far as jazz pianists, I think probably the biggest influence is Bill Evans.
Oh, great.
I think he's so good. It's insane. Well, he was, rest in peace, but he was so good. It was insane. I can't believe he was so good. I would say, he's the biggest influence. You know, Mehldau is a huge influence. I haven't listened to him in a long time, but I went through a Mehldau phase and it's still in my playing. I mean, that's the kind of musician he is. And Keith Jarrett and probably, Herbie's in there. Herbie's up there. And if I had to do one more, Keith Jarrett, Herbie, those are the main ones, you know.
I'm surprised you wouldn't say Thelonious.
Thelonious is up there. We have differing opinions on music stuff, but he's definitely up there. He had some stuff. There was that one tune. What is that one tune? I'm gonna do my ultimate pet peeve on a radio show and then go off into space. I guess I'm not going to, but he's done some really cool stuff that you can. He did it one way, and you can kind of put your own spin on it. There was this guy, Jason Moran. He's a really great jazz pianist up in New York, and he basically did this fresh look on Thelonious Monk. He did a whole album on it, and it made me – there's like all this backbeat stuff and everything. It's still piano, but all organic instruments with the backbeat, and it was just kind of like, woo, it was pretty heavy, so – that's Thelonious awesome. Is up there in a way, in his own way, yeah.
And I think an artist that's like kind of under the radar. He's not like a big name to a lot of like people that don't know music. I would say Michel Camilo is like one of my favorite jazz.
He's really good.
And he just has like the Latin thing too. It's just like he incorporates that with the jazz. Yeah. There's just something that's cool about it. Let's talk about your records. Let's talk about your songs.
Let's talk about it, dude.
Tell me what went into, let's, okay, we're going to play, why don't we play Peter Gibbons? Is that the first one we're going to play?
Yeah, sure.
So Peter Gibbons, tell me like what influenced you to write this song and tell me what was the kind of like the headspace you were in to write it, compose it, record it.
Well, Peter Gibbons is, it's named after a character from Office Space, which is my favorite movie. So it's that guy. And he goes through this dark time. He's super depressed. And then he gets hypnotized. And all of a sudden, he's this Zen dude. And to the point where it's kind of unhealthy, but it's really funny. Great movie.
Yeah.
And I remember I just came up with the chorus of it. And you'll hear the chorus. It's pretty obvious. There's no words, but it's obvious. And I just came up with the chorus like immediately, randomly. And I'm like, dude, this reminds me of when Peter Gibbons was super Zen. And so I just kind of pieced the rest of the tune around that. The first part is kind of solemn, I guess. And I guess kind of signifies his inner demons. And then when it goes where the backbeat comes in, that's where he's at. And then I just kind of took it from there and whatever, you know.
Little fun fact, the first Red Stapler was only released after Office Space because they had to paint the stapler red because no Red Stapler existed.
Oh, gosh, I didn't know that, dude. You made that up.
No, I swear to God. That's from the movie. They said they had to paint a stapler red because no Red Stapler existed, and now Swingline has a Red Stapler because of Office Space, dude. That's how awesome Office Space is. It's like, oh, they just invented the Red Stapler. So it's like it's the best for so many reasons. But yeah, we're gonna play. Here's Will Harrington with Peter Gibbons.
Thank you.
incredible, dude. I got chills, bro. Like, man, your playing is like, it's like nobody else's, man. It really is. I mean that with the utmost respect and sincerity. You have such a great feel. My question for this is, how many takes did you do, and when did you know that was the one? Because I assume it was all live.
Oh, dude, that was forever ago. I don't even remember. That was the solo piano version, and I did a trio version, which took longer, if you could believe that, because typically it's the other way around. But the solo piano one, man, I, you know, the solo was done separately, and I'm not supposed to admit that, but I don't care. But I would say that took me a while because I'm kind of a perfectionist, but you know, it took me, I don't remember how long it took. I don't remember how many takes, but what I did was I did like a couple solos, and I went with the best one. And I might have had a couple notes that I had to fix, but really the tough part was just getting into the headspace of like, okay, I need to solo now and not worry about what's going on, like the red light, the record button. You know how that is. I mean, it's just like kind of trying to sound inspired when you're, thankfully I was recording at my house so I could press pause whenever, but you know, it's trying to play inspired and act like it's not on, but it is on. So I don't know if I still don't know if I figured that out. I don't know if I ever will, to be honest, but unless it's like a live recording at a club. But that's basically it. I mean, it took me it took me a few takes. It took some doing, but you know, it helps when you're at home. So if I was in a studio paying for time, it probably would have taken me less time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's also like, there's also a certain place where that you have to get in when you're doing it at home to get it right, because you have forever. And then there's a different kind of like mind, like a headspace that you're in when you're in a studio and you're paying for every minute of time. So you're like, I need to get this done. It needs to be, you know what I mean? It's like there's a, it is easy to either overindulge or to like almost cut yourself short. Like, okay, we don't need a fifth take. We got it within those four. So it's like this happy medium. I interviewed John William Thomas from Bruce Hornsby's band.
And he said
the coolest thing. He said, anytime I think about the music when it's happening and it's just flowing and it feels good, the moment I think about it, it escapes me. And he's like, when I'm not thinking about it and I'm like just kind of like enjoying and being present and hearing and not thinking about it at all, that's when it seems to flow and just be in that right space. And he said, it's like trying to catch a fish sometimes. It's like,
yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that.
It's so hard to kind of like get into that space where it's like you're consciously thinking I'm doing a take. It's almost like I have to think of something else to distract me so that I can get into that place to just make music. And it's just weird that it's like that, because you're practicing, you have to concentrate, you have to get into that place where it's, and it's like, usually you get into that like kind of playful place where it's like, yo, I'm not thinking about this because I'm not recording. And that's when cool things happen. But as soon as that red light goes on, you're like, I'm consciously aware that I'm recording, and there's this added pressure that has nothing to do with being creative, yet it is hanging on you to just make sure that you get it done. So, I mean, to get that take the way it sounded and your solo, that was a tremendous composition, man. I mean, honestly.
Thank you so much.
You got a great feel in the way even you write. So when you were just coming up with the chords, the riff of the song came first or the chorus came first?
They came at the same time, man. Same time. That first da 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 da, all at the same time. And that's maybe sometimes it's not like that, but when it is like that, that's in my opinion the stuff that I'm happiest with that I do.
How did you mic your piano?
Like, oh, okay. Well,
constant thing that I'm always.
That, first of all, I do want to say that was my old piano, which, okay, it's fine. My new piano slays it. But that one was an old piano. It was all I could afford at the time. But
what was your old piano, out of curiosity?
That was a Yamaha, what is it, a G3 or something? A G3. It was a 6-foot Yamaha, and it was from 1977. It was okay, but the hammers were a little kind of rusty sounding. But it got the job done. I did that whole solo piano record in there. And then when I moved to Nashville, I traded that in and got a pretty pricey one, but it's worth every penny. But that one, I used the same. What'd you said?
What did you get for the new piano?
Oh, this is a Yamaha GC. It's a GC1. It's like, it's almost a 6-foot grand, and it was brand new. And the hammers are like fluffy clouds, dude. It's great. So yeah, you'd flip out. All my trio stuff is recorded on that. And well, my recent trio stuff, not all of it, but it's been a lot better. But to answer your question, the miking thing, I do two small diaphragm condensers. I just put one. I point one at the label, and then I point one at the middle of the bass strings. And I don't spend too much time on that. A lot of people will bring the tape measure out and all of that stuff. And I'm sure there's something to that. I know that there's phase cancellation, all that nerdy stuff, that whatever. But I found that I asked one of my favorite pianists about phase cancellation, and I won't use the language that he said, but he said, blank all that blank. And he goes, just whatever. And you know what? He's got the best piano sound I've ever heard on a record. So I'm like, all right, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. So I use two Sheps, CMC6s. And I got those because nobody has them, and everybody uses the Neumanns. Those are amazing, but I like stuff that nobody has. So yeah, I just put it in there, full stick, and just put them in the piano and kind of set and forget.
I'm amazed that you just did that at home. Just like, it sounds like it's in a big room. Did you add reverb? And
Yeah, totally. I got it as dead as possible. It's just, I got it as dead as possible. I built my own diffusers, and I put a bunch of panels on the wall, and just I got as dead as possible. And that was basically, I didn't mix it myself. But yeah, he threw some plate reverb on there and called it a day.
Yeah, but it sounded great. It sounded awesome. What do you want to play next? What song are we playing next?
What about I bet you dig Hudson Creek Bridge. This is on my old piano, but it's still trio, so it hides the piano shortcomings a little bit. But I think you dig that one. That's a good example of when I say the theme is it's a melodic theme, but then you can hear the bluesy, groovy stuff when I solo and everything. So yeah, I think you'll dig that one.
Awesome. Let's play it. Here's Hudson Creek Bridge by Will Harrington. So good, man. God, your songs are so insane. You have to promise me something when you come to LA.
Dude, I will promise you anything. What you want?
You have to keep playing gigs of your own. like your music is so great. And it's like, I remember seeing you. What's the name of the place you played up on Vermont?
Dude, you were at that show? Rockwell, dude. Rockwell.
And man, it was so freaking amazing.
Oh man, I didn't know you were at that show. That was forever. That was 10 years ago.
The one, never stop playing shows, man. It's like your music is too good for you to not play shows. So
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot.
It really is fantastic. And I have to thank you, something on a side note. I remember you and I were talking once about music. You said, man, my favorite band or one of my favorite bands is the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? I would never have thought a kid from New Orleans who loves jazz, one of his favorite bands, the Eagles. And you know what? Because of that, I bought tickets to see the Eagles.
Oh, wow.
I was so blown away. I got to see him with Glenn Frey. And I owe that to you because I would not have seen him with Glenn Frey if it wasn't for you. And he died like 6 months after I saw him. And it was like, it's still one of the best concerts I've seen. I've seen him without Glenn Frey, but they are one of the best bands I've ever seen. And I owe that to you to like push me to go see them live. And they were phenomenal. They were, I'm so glad I saw him with Glenn because I saw that like the most quintessential part of the group with Don and the original guys. So it was just awesome. So I wanted to ask you, how did that influence come into your life coming from New Orleans? Was it like just being around friends that were listening to it? Like, how did the Eagles become?
They were just all over. My parents listened to classic rock and they were, you know, they just had this sound that I always loved that you couldn't quite. You just couldn't quite, at least I couldn't quite describe it. It always just had this sound that I just like found addictive. And it was just natural. And I liked their melodies. I mean, their influence is in my playing for sure too. But I just liked them. They were all over the radio, like classic rock radio back then. I don't even know what classic rock means anymore. I mean, it's classic rock Nirvana now. I mean, back when we were, you know, younger, it was classic rock was like Eagles and Zeppelin and Queen. I don't even know.
I listened to it the other day and they're like, we got this song. It's as classic as ever. It was Stone Temple Pilots. And I was like, classic rock now? That's crazy. So Nirvana is Smashing Pumpkins. That's now considered classic rock, which is crazy to me because I'm like, I think of Zeppelin, the Eagles, Pink Floyd. That's classic rock to me. But now all the music I grew up with in high school, that's become that. So, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. When you were in Nashville, or you still are, but I mean, like when you were playing with Nashville, did you find that you were playing more country gigs, more of that sound, or was it becoming more eclectic once you were kind of absorbed into the scene?
Man, I've played almost entirely country gigs. Ironically, one of the non-country gigs I did was actually with Don Felder, one of the original Eagles.
Right.
And so I just thought that was funny. Like I did play. There's that and like one other gig that I've done, and I don't remember what it was, but there's like one other gig that I've done that wasn't country. Everything else, total country. You know what I mean? And I knew that getting in here. It's not like it's good or bad. But it's very much country, which I think my playing kind of lent itself to that naturally a bit to the classic Nashville sound. So, but a lot of country gigs, occasional Christian gigs, and a couple live gigs that weren't country, and then that's pretty much all she wrote, you know.
Did you cross paths with Jason Gamble by chance?
No, I didn't.
he's the guitarist for Lady A, Lady Antebellum, formerly Lady.
Oh, okay.
What's ironic is he's like a rocker in a country band, and he just released a jazz guitar record. So it's like you guys have to cross paths because you have a lot of the same influences. You love jazz. You love like good rock, good, you know, you love good country music. So you guys have to cross paths. I'll have to link you together for sure.
Oh, dude, I love that. Anything. Yeah.
Let's play another song. I think the third one I have, let me make sure, is Until It's Gone. Tell me a little bit of backstory about this song.
Man, this is one of those that I just played the melody. I wrote the melody, and I was at my friend's house randomly, and I sat down at his piano. This is something interesting that happens. I sat down at his piano. Every piano sounds unique, and I just played like an A-flat chord, and this melody came up. I don't know if I would have written it at my piano, because it's something about that piano that inspired me to do it. And most of it came out immediately. And then I kind of ran with it, and I listened to it, and I said, you know, it sounds kind of nostalgic. I didn't write. I usually title afterwards because of what it reminds me of.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, Until It's Gone is pretty cool. And then I went on Shutterstock and found a picture of suitcases to use as I mean, I don't know. It's whatever. It's a lot cheaper than a graphic designer. Let's just say that. But that one was fun. That was on my current piano, and that I was really proud of how that one came out. And then the trio sounds amazing. And so that was pretty much it. I mean, there's nothing crazy to that. I just sat down on my friend's piano, and something came out, you know?
Cool about that is a friend of mine told me, like, instruments have a way of unlocking different songs at a different...
Yes, they do.
One of the coolest things. So you just kind of confirmed that with this story. So, but let's play it. Here's Will Harrington, Until It's Gone.
Thank you.
Dude, you are a marvel, man. I mean,
Thank you. Your
songs, it's like, it's ridiculous. How is it that everything you write is great?
That was a fun one, dude. That was a fun one.
And that lick at the end, what this is crazy. You know what's so funny is, like, we just opened for Rebirth Brass Band a couple months ago.
Nice.
And we're going to
By the way, is this the same guys like back in the day?
Yep. I think some have changed. They said after the pandemic, a couple guys have swapped out.
Who's on bass these days?
I have to look at the names. I'll have to send you the names. I've got some of them in my phone, but they were telling me, like, oh man, since the pandemic, everything's changed. It's like, we don't tour as much. But the thing I like is, like, we're about to open for Dirty Dozen Brass Band. I'm like,
oh, nice.
All these New Orleans acts are just the most ridiculous musically because they just bring so much energy. And I was just, when you texted me, you're like, yo, I'm moving back. I'm like, I must have been doing something right just being around these New Orleans bands because it's brought my New Orleans keyboardist back home to Los Angeles.
That's funny.
So I wanted to ask you, like, when you were in the scene in New Orleans, I know you studied out here. Did you kind of find that it was a very welcoming community to just jam with players or to play with all kinds of different bands in that capacity?
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I started really early there, so it's kind of hard for me to – it's my experience as, like, in my 30s would be different back in the day when I was my teens, but – really, I went to college after the hurricane. I went somewhere else. I actually went to college in Nashville before I moved to LA, and then my parents moved to Houston. So it was kind of a weird thing. I was 18 when the hurricane hit, and so ever since then, I've gone there in passing. I've played there, I've toured through there. And when I go back, I'll play with friends every now and then. But I haven't really been a part of that scene in 20 years.
Does it make you want to go back and just kind of like...
Oh, I always love. I love coming back. I was actually there a couple weeks ago. I always love going back. It's changed a lot, but, you know, it's always good to go back home. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like it's like one of the music terminals of the country. You know, it's like, I feel like it's New York, Memphis, Chicago, New Orleans, LA. I think those are like the music cities that if I had to put them on a map, and I'd put Nashville up there too, you know?
Well, it's funny. I would consider, yeah, Nashville definitely. I would consider New Orleans. It's like one of those places. People from there, it's like there's something about them that you can't really get most places, as with other towns too, but New Orleans has its own thing. But the funny thing, we used to joke, it's a great place to be from, but everybody like moves on to like some of the bigger towns from New Orleans, and that's kind of like a bittersweet thing. Like, you're happy for them to leave, but then all the good guys like really leave, and then some of the good guys stay. But you know, most of my New Orleans friends that I came up with, some of them were in New Orleans, but most of them went to LA and New York and Chicago. That's where most of them went. You know,
yep.
I'm one of them, you know?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I think it's, one of those places that you'll never outgrow, but you outgrow it because it's like, you want to get to a bigger pond and just be around more different places. So that's what's cool about it, you know?
Correct.
Will, where can people find you if they want to find you online, either on YouTube, Spotify, or websites? Where can people find you?
Well, yeah, man. I mean, Spotify is just my name. And then I have a YouTube channel that I revisited for the first time in a couple of years. It has all my videos of me like playing with the trio. And then, that's pretty much it. I used to have a website a long time ago.
Your trio is Sean Hurley, and who's on drums?
Sean Hurley and Kyle Fair.
Amazing.
Yeah, I love playing with those guys.
Yeah, you guys just sound locked in. You guys have a vibe.
Yeah.
So I hope I see you guys play out here when you do come out here.
I think I'm really going to hit that hard once I'm excited to do that in LA, among other things. Yeah. Play with NK Band. I'm excited for that.
Well, we're going to have you on a bunch of Sight and Sound episodes, so get ready.
All right, man.
We're going to be in a lot of cool studios with a lot of cool special guests. We just had James Brown's bassist, Fred Thomas.
I saw that.
Dude, his pocket was...
Yeah, I figured.
It was Jeff's kiss, man. It was like, I couldn't believe he was 80 years old. And like, you know, like, get on the good foot. He does like a little solo bass lick. And like, started doing that solo bass, like the whole band just like was like, oh my god, it sounds like the record. It just, it was one of those things, like you really understand, feel like when you play with somebody like that, it's like, oh my god, this guy still has it at 80. So it was kind of like one of those things I don't think I'll ever forget, but I'm excited to have you on this. I want you to get here safe, and we're get ready to play. We're going to play a lot, but check out Will Harrington's music on all platforms. Check out his YouTube channel. Tremendous piano player, tremendous composer. Will, you are a bad motherfucker.
Hey, watch your language, man. Oh, dude, thanks for having me, man. Let's do it again.
Yeah, man. And on behalf of Sam, myself, and Will, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and hair grease. Cheers.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.